We're gonna get to Tom Brady, Colin. Just be patient. All right, welcome to Speak for Yourself. I'm Jason Whitlock. That is Marcellus Wiley, that dude.
My dog.
Coming up, we'll tell you why Tom Brady could fall back in love with Bill Belichick.
Plus, I got the latest installment of That Dude's Dudes. But we start today with a Whitlock. What you got, big dog?
Oh, I have a defense of Hall of Fame running back Eric Dickerson.
Okay.
ED is in the media's crosshairs today. Like John Hancock, Dickerson signed his name in big, bold letters to a polarizing declaration and proclamation. Give me money and health care benefits, or give me death. That's pretty much the tone of the letter Dickerson and a handful of Pro Football Hall of Famers penned, demanding a salary and lifetime insurance for Hall of Famers. If their demands aren't met, Dickerson threatens that he and other all-time greats will boycott the 2019 Hall of Fame induction ceremony. Yesterday, Dickerson told TMZ his salary demands from the NFL.
If it was up to me, I mean, I think every Hall of Famer would get about $300,000 a year. That would be, I think, a proper number.
Dickerson also tweeted out a new letter saying, this is typical NFL pitting players against each other, whether it's retired players versus Hall of Famers, or whether it's players who are on the Hall of Fame board versus players supporting the cause. Between salary and insurance, Dickerson's group is asking for about $100 million a year from the NFL.
Who?
Not everyone is on board. Jerry Rice and Kurt Warner issued statements distancing themselves from Dickerson in the ransom note that had their names on it. Respected NFL reporter Jim Trotter directly attacked Dickerson's motives, tweeting, Eric Dickerson's leading group of Hall of Famers threatening to boycott the Hall of Fame if Gold Jackets don't get annual salary and lifetime health care. This reeks of selfishness. Why not fight for all retired players, reminiscent of the QB club that once divided players among the members then? Dickerson. I disagree with Trotter. This whole scenario reeks of bad leadership. And I'm not talking about Eric Dickerson. I'm talking about DeMaurice Smith and the NFLPA. In the absence of credible, high integrity, properly focused leadership, chaos and dysfunction reign. The opportunistic take advantage. When elected leaders fail to lead, television personalities capitalize and fill the void. Message!
Message?
Message! The NFLPA should be leading the fight to take care of its former players. I don't have any respect for people who don't take care of the people and institutions who took care of them. The guys signing $100 million contracts in today's modern NFL should be the guys making damn sure Joe Delamanour and other Hall of Famers aren't struggling to meet their day-to-day necessities. The whole league should be embarrassed, the players and the owners. The league is generating $14 to $15 billion annually. Roger Goodell is earning $40 million annually, and there's no fight to make sure all the former players who contributed to the league's success aren't having their basic needs met. But you're fighting to make sure some hey, look at me clown can build a Twitter brand taking a knee during the national anthem.
Wow.
You're fighting for meaningless gestures, but you do nothing that benefits your forefathers. Charity starts at home. A man that doesn't take care of his own family shouldn't be trusted or respected to take care of larger issues. He's just fronting. He's putting on a show to build popularity outside his home. Eric Dickerson's strategy and execution weren't perfect, but I respect his intent and realize he's in this position because DeMaurice Smith and the NFLPA have failed to properly lead or fight. Marcellus, this is on DeMaurice Smith and the current players. They should be leading this deal, not Eric Dickerson.
Wow. So much division to go around. I mean, you used the key word in there, opportunistic. And unfortunately, Eric Dickerson and this initiative sounds like it's opportunistic with a negative connotation, not a positive one. Think about it. This is the car accident that Eric Dickerson and the Hall of Famers went through, which is called the NFL experience. So you go through that 10, 20-year career, decorated, you're one of the best to ever do it. And you get out of that car accident, and then you say, hey, man, I'm okay. I'm fine. I'm one of the best to ever do it. Put my gold jacket on, I'm fine. And then you turn around and finally look at what just hit you, and more importantly, who just hit you in that nice Rolls Royce. Guess who's in that Rolls Royce?
Who?
The NFL. And then all of a sudden, that same dude who was sitting there saying, I'm fine, I'm good. Oh, my neck. Oh, my back. You know what? And it changes the entire dynamic. And I'm a former player.
And I've been to your house, and you ain't living too bad yourself, and neither is Eric Dickerson.
No, none of us are living bad if you talk about the experience. Well, let's talk about that experience, because I think that's where the issue lies. The issue lies, one, that there's still no solidarity amongst the players. No solidarity amongst Eric Dickerson and the Hall of Famers, and no solidarity between Eric Dickerson, Hall of Famers, and active players. Please show me and tell me why.
Because the focus is never right. Again, Eric Dickerson and these guys have pointed to baseball, and look how good they have it.
Yeah.
Because they are committed to taking care of each other. And so, again, when I look at the players, football players, I don't see this commitment to each other. And so then you blame NFL ownership for not having the same level of passion that you're not having the same level of passion for. And so I'm saying, if you're in this league now, signing a $90 million guaranteed contract, and I'm talking about Kirk Cousins and Matt Ryan,
right,
and Odell Beckham Jr., these guys, Aaron Donald, if you're in this league now, and you're like, wow, look at this blessing. I know guys that played in this league that made peanuts and had to work part-time jobs. They built this thing so that I could have this. Again, I said it yesterday, and I just want to be crystal clear. My mother worked in a factory. Overtime, did all kinds of things, sacrificing for me and my brother. There's no way I'm gonna get here and not immediately think about her. And so as football players, I don't see how you could get, man, I just made $100 million, guaranteed.
Mm-hmm.
Who all do I need to thank for this? Let me thank my mom and daddy. Let me bless my family. But let me also thank the guys before me.
And that's where you err in terms of your judgment on these current players, because you're not making the same assessment of the players of yesterday when they were current players. Because when they were current players, they weren't making peanuts in comparison to what other people were making in their world. Think about it. It's lesser than the players now because the game continues to grow.
Marcellus.
The game continues
to grow. Stop it, Marcellus.
Oh, hold on.
There was we can bring Mark Schlereth out here who didn't play all in the olden days. His first year, he made like $45,000.
First of all, $45,000,
yes.
Stop playing.
Yes.
Stop
yes.
playing. Now,
yes.
That's broke. But here's the thing. I'm not even talking about an individual case. I'm talking about in totality. Players didn't take care of their money in certain situations. Players in certain situations
Marcellus,
did the right thing
Marcellus,
and didn't make enough.
Marcellus, I gotta stop you.
Stop me. How are you gonna tell me?
Because, Marcellus, I just want you to understand the history of this game. Guys used to, Otis Taylor with the Kansas City Chiefs, a great player, should be in the Hall of Fame. These dudes were working part-time
I
jobs.
I understand that, and you know
Lynn
what?
Dawson, the quarterback of the Chiefs in the Hall of Fame during the offseason, he was a television broadcaster.
You're conflating this. You're saying that they didn't make any money or they made less money to the point where they made enough money. It's not a birthright to be in the NFL. It's a privilege. You chose to be in the NFL, and it was a profession that paid X. And then from there, the NFL is, they've done a retroactive good job, not great job, and improving our benefit package. Let me give you an example, because you want to give me Otis Taylor and others. Magic Johnson, with the Los Angeles Lakers, signed a 25-year, $25 million contract. Okay, so now a guy who doesn't even get off the bench is making more than that. All of a sudden, that guy has to go back to the Magic Johnson or to anybody else of that era and say, here you go, when you don't know what they're experiencing.
No, Marcellus. The NFL and the NBA are two different monstrosities.
Okay, I can
NFL
different examples.
Monstrosities. But again, this league is generating $15 billion. The NBA is generating $5 billion. Smaller rosters. And Magic Johnson made enough money on and off the court, shoe deals and all that. The model for basketball is different. I just want to go back just to real life, real reality. Some people would argue, like, my mother had it pretty good back in the day, working in a factory and working a second job. They knew people that were doing worse than her. But to me, when I receive this blessing and my brother receives the blessings he's received, of course we got to look back and make sure mama is good.
And they are.
No,
you're conflating this because, look, the National Association of Journalists. Is Whitlock right now making all his millions of dollars over there saying, you know what, I remember when a guy only made peanuts selling papers out the trunk. And, I don't see Whitlock doing that.
Marcellus. Marcellus.
Yes.
You know why Darnell Smith is sitting over there? Because of that same deal. He's from my high school. He's from my neighborhood. He played at my college. It's about reaching back and making sure that it ain't just me.
And they are reaching back. You're saying the NFL's not reaching back? Reaching, not only are they reaching back, they're reaching forward. You said that Colin Kaepernick is a meaningless gesture. Guess what? $90 million came out of that.
I know, and Colin Kaepernick made $45 million. He's making money from Nike. I'm talking about the day-to-day NFL player. And again, you're looking at Major League Baseball, to me, is the prime example. Because Eric throws it out there, if you play 10 years in the Major League, you get a pension of $220,000. They fought for that.
They did.
Through their collective bargaining agreement, and that leadership came from within about taking care of each other. And again, to me, this fight, as great as this game has become, and as guys, again, Marcellus, when this thing started out, there was no intention that it would be, and I'm going to bring the racial component into it just as a black man. It's a 70% black league. Mm-hmm. And these guys, Jim Brown and a bunch of guys went through a lot of stuff so that guys could stand on those shoulders and make those millions. And I just don't understand why these players don't realize that and aren't committed to, man, we got to do better for these people and let us lead this charge. And again, in the absence of leadership, you're going to have an Eric Dickerson step up and do something that current players should be doing. Take care of your own.
I never thought I'd hear Mr. Ball State, Mr. Middle America, take the elitist position, which is not look back at your former players and help them, which players do, which the NFL does, but look out for the cream of the crop only.
No, that's not what I'm saying.
No, but that's what Eric Dickerson is saying right now. This is nothing but a composition of T.O. saying, I'm going to boycott the Hall of Fame.
Good point.
And Colin Kaepernick saying, you know what? You can get some money out the NFL if you give them enough public pressure. And this is just a conflation of that.
Marcellus, you're missing my point, though. I've said, when you don't have proper leadership, you get a TV personality stepping in doing something misguided. Eric Dickerson is taking advantage of poor leadership. He shouldn't be in this position. There should be a plan about how do we take care of everybody, not just the Hall of Famers. But when the DeMaurice Smith and the current players are falling down on their job, here comes someone out of TV with their plan, their poorly executed letter, and we get upset with them. I'm not getting upset with Eric Dickerson. I'm getting upset with the current leadership, and it's your failure that created this opportunity for Eric Dickerson.
But what's interesting is the contradiction. You just told me how these players and the game has continued to grow, and we now have almost fully guaranteed contracts when we know that that wasn't the state of affairs just yesterday.
Yeah.
And now you're saying we're going to blame the leadership that has helped those same players benefit from that growth.
DeMaurice Smith has been getting killed at the negotiating table. He's living off of what Gene Upshaw and Paul Tagliabue did. They're doing okay. They could be doing better. We could get
That's another
topic.
That's another one.
But he's living off of what Gene Upshaw and Paul Tagliabue and Pete Rozelle did. Rather than, and again, it's poor leadership.
Yeah, he's winning with Dungy's players, huh? We're going there now.
Barry Switzer win with Jimmy Johnson?
Okay, well, look.
It happened.
Get another coach in there and see if coach wins.
He's
in that
Barry Switzer. All right, stick around. Later in the show, we'll give you our approval ratings for Eric Dickerson. Here's where they were before the Hall of Fame boycott, with both of us having him at GOAT status.
Yeah,
we'll see if our good friend and regular on this show has fallen at all. Bragging rights and huge cash prizes are up for grabs this weekend and all season long at DraftKings, the leader in one-week fantasy sports. How huge? We're talking over $2 million in total prizes. With one-week fantasy at DraftKings, you choose when to play. Draft a new team every week with no season-long commitment. At DraftKings, you are the GM. Just choose your players, stay under the salary cap, and see how your team stacks up against the competition. No matter what your skill level is, there's a contest waiting for you at DraftKings. So if you've been thinking about trying one-week fantasy football, now is the time to play, because nothing makes Football Sunday more exciting than when you have a DraftKings lineup on the line. And you can play free with your first deposit to compete for your share of over $2 million in total prizes. Go to DraftKings.com or download the app today. Use code SFYS to enter a contest for free this weekend with your first deposit and compete for your share of over $2 million in total prizes. That's code SFYS only at DraftKings. The game inside the game. Minimum $5 deposit required. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details. All right, welcome back. Jason Whitlock and that dude, Marcellus Wiley. Time for some big stories. Let's start in New England, where according to a new book about Bill Belichick by ESPN's Ian O'Connor, the tension between Belichick and Tom Brady might have been worse than anyone thought. Not me. With Brady actually considering leaving the Patriots as recently as March. As one source explained to O'Connor, quote, if you're married 18 years to a grouchy person who gets under your skin and never compliments you after a while, you want to divorce him.
Mm.
That pretty much summarizes it. I'm going to put a different spin on it, though.
Okay.
You know, Kyle Hurd was big on this topic all day. I can't believe he didn't go here. 18 years is a perfect time for a marriage. You get married, you have a kid. 18 years later, the kid's off in college. Mm. And so when you first start out a marriage, it's passionate love.
Yeah.
Then it's about raising the kids.
Yeah.
And making sure you get them Super Bowl titles. And then they go off to college and it's just you and me, baby. And both of you looking like, it's just you and me, that's it. That's all there is.
Right, that's who you are?
That's who you are. And you start thinking about, do I really want to do the next 25 with just me and you?
Mm.
And then if you survive that and get to the other side, and you're about 60, 65, it's like, oh, I really need you.
Yeah, you're right.
I need you to give me my medicine. I need you for this and that.
Yeah.
We vacation together, great, and you fall back in love. This just seems natural after 18 years. They looking at each other like, this is it?
Yeah, man, it's funny. Let's run with this. This example is true because they're looking at each other like, who needs who? Who are you? And I think that full disclosure right now is being unveiled to the point where Tom Brady has learned who Bill Belichick really is at his core. And that's a control freak. I mean, this is a guy right now, as they both were going up the mountain. And people forget that Bill Belichick, in his first six seasons, five of them were losing seasons in Cleveland mostly, and then gets to New England. Injury to Drew Bledsoe, obviously Tom Brady. Dun, 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 dun. And everyone is looking at Bill Belichick still as one of the better coaches. Backstory, him and Bill Parcells have their issue. We think the issue is about the New York Jets and him departing suddenly. But in reality, at the core of that marriage, it's Parcells looking at Belichick saying, you can't win without me. And Belichick said, watch me prove it. And then Belichick proving it and Parcells trying to prove he can win without Belichick never succeeding. All that said, Tom Brady looks at his coach now and says, one day I'm a GOAT. So they were perfect together, looking out for each other, got your own parking space, you got your privileges, you're a Super Bowl champion, you're Tom Brady. But then the GOAT conversation for Belichick met the GOAT conversation for Brady. And the control freak said, wait a minute, can't be up here with me. Let me put my dagger down right here and create a level between them. And in full disclosure, I share a marketing agent with Tom Brady. I can't blame my agent. I don't get the same deals as Tom Brady, obviously. But in full disclosure, Tom Brady just wanted to be treated like an 18-year Super Bowl champion GOAT that he is. And he gets undressed like he's not.
I think you have said control freak is the issue. I think it's like in a marriage where Tom, no, I can deal with you being a control freak. That's you. I can't get that out of you. But here's what I need, particularly now that I'm really into this relationship with Giselle, now that I'm really into relationship with my kids. If you're going to be my mentor, my father figure in football, I need some love, man.
No, what?
I need some affection.
Right.
And that's where the issue is. Bill Belichick just doesn't know how to show that love and affection. And Tom Brady, I've had it. He's in a space mentally through Alice Guerrero, through his wife, through his relationship with his kids. He wants to feel the love.
I don't know. I disagree, because he felt the love climbing up the mountain with Bill Belichick. And Jimmy Garoppolo felt the love without even climbing up the mountain. So Belichick, let's remove persona Belichick away from the man Belichick, as Ian Connor's book is going to explain to a lot of people. The dude has some gregarious personality traits that we Most people.
Not enough for Brady. Not enough for Brady.
Not enough for Brady, right. So this is why I say control freak. I'm not using it as a charged term. It's because of the control that you need in your environment, you stop short of showing that affection. You stop short of showing him that love that he properly deserves because you want to control the situation. That's why every single press conference, close to the vest.
All right, to the NBA, where reportedly Jimmy Butler has requested a trade out of Minnesota. According to ESPN's Adrian Wojnarowski, Butler told the Timberwolves he wants to go to one of three teams, the Clippers,
yeah,
Nets, or Knicks,
nah, nah,
all of which have the cap space to give him a max deal next summer. listen, it's fascinating the Clippers are on the list because I hope it happens.
I mean, fascinating. You say it like
you're
caught off guard.
I hope it happens.
Clip City, Chip City.
But overall, I'm not disappointed with Jimmy Butler. I'm disappointed with a league that just has player after player after player demanding trades out of town. As a fan, I speak a lot of time when it comes to the NBA, I'm a fan.
Yes.
And a lot of these sports. I want my superstar player more controlled by my hometown team. As a fan. I'm not talking as an athlete. As a fan.
Exposed.
I want Paul George with the Indiana Pacers.
Oh, I bet you do, because nobody else is going to stay there unless you force them. Look, small markets. It's not even small markets, because San Antonio Spurs, Miami, not the biggest market. Like, it's not even market size at times. It's just situations. Some places, hey, you better develop them and draft them, because they're not raising their hand to be free agents. I understand that. What I like about this is the process. I'm not like you. I'm not sitting there saying, get off my lawn, because back in your days, you said that. That is you.
I'm a fan. That ain't a get off my lawn.
No, you know why? Because when general managers did the exact same action, the exact same result, you had no problem with it.
General managers did what?
In the 80s and in the 90s before the players and Michael Jordan starting this and one-year deals and LeBron James taking it to the next step of demanding where he wants to go, general managers had this opportunity and took full advantage of creating the teams they wanted. That's why we had Super Team Celtics, Super Team Lakers, and even Super Team Bulls. They were making all these moves, and you're fine with it when the front office does it. I'm fine with it when the players do it. And this one was done above board. Two reasons. One, he sat down with the coach. I'm not going to surprise you. Not going to be a leak to a website. And then two, I'm going to tell you where I want to go, and I'll sign an extension. Therefore, this franchise will benefit through the negotiation. I'm not going to make it a labor affair. We're going to get what we want, and you're going to get what you want, because we're going to sit down and talk to each other like adults.
Marcel, I just want to restate it.
What, off my lawn?
No, listen.
What?
My father started taking me and my brother to Pacer games when I was like 2 years old.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just a fan.
I get
it. And so when Paul George just says, hey, man, I want out of here, as a fan, that bothers me.
Why? He doesn't have freedom?
Because I'm a Pacer fan. There's a Pacer mat that sits in front of my door. Reggie Miller's jersey hangs in my apartment. I'm a Pacer fan. I have an attachment to Paul George. We drafted him. We developed him. It bothers me when he just said, I'm going to bounce.
All right, you're a Pacer fan. Better question, are you an NBA fan?
I'm a Pacer fan and an NBA, but I'm a Pacer fan first. I'm an NBA fan too, but I want my players to stay with the teams that drafted and developed. That's just the way
I feel. If you're an NBA fan, you let them shuffle the deck, and I don't care who's the dealer, as long as I get some different cards, and I like it every year.
All right, to Dallas, spoken like a Clippers fan, never won it. Dallas, where an NBA investigation has concluded that the Mavericks organization had serious workplace misconduct and ineffective management in relation to allegations of harassment against the team's former CEO. As a result, Mark Cuban has agreed to donate $10 million to organizations that promote women in leadership and combat domestic violence, four times the highest possible fine allowed under NBA rules. All right, so they've slapped Mark Cuban with a gigantic, enormous fine that clearly indicates to me that the behavior inside the workplace that he's overseeing was animal house and completely out of control. But I still believe it's all cosmetic. And this is what drives me crazy about the NBA and the media mostly. Not the NBA, the media. Oh, God, the NFL is so terrible. It's so hostile. It's so toxically masculine. Jerry Richardson had to sell his team.
Yes.
Mark Cuban gets to cut a check. go on the jump today and pretend like he did nothing. I'm donating money to these causes, and you're a champion, Mark. And God, you've just handled this well, Mark. It's awesome. You're the greatest. Hmm. But the NBA gets, the NFL gets demonized. If this had happened in the NFL, they'd have to shut down the damn franchise and collapse it, and everybody would have to go to prison. NBA, let's throw an applaud, and look how woke the NBA is.
Would they?
Get out of here.
Would they? Because Mark Cuban, not trying to absolve him of any guilt or whatever he was directly involved with.
He wasn't directly involved, according to him.
My point. But indirectly, obviously, you're the overseer of a huge organization that has hundreds, if not thousands, of employees. I get it. And you're talking about Jerry Richardson. You talk about other situations, even in NBA. And when you talk about what happened with the Clippers, like
They tolerated for 20 years.
But when you're directly involved, there's going to be a different judgment than if you're indirectly involved. What I liked about this is, one, the closed door discussions had to go like this. Mark, you have to change your workplace. Mark's like, I agree. And we have to show punishment, and you have to change it in terms of supporting a new workplace environment. Deal. We're going to fine you. Don't fine me, because that sounds like guilt. That implies guilt. I'll do more than just the punishment. I'll donate 4X of what the fine maximum is and save my name and reputation from guilt. And you know what I like about that? The resources come 4x fold to that situation, that workplace. And I like, it shows a cooperation with those 30 owners and their commissioner. Like you said, in NFL, that doesn't always seem to be the case in solidarity with their issues.
If it weren't for the media and the way they would twist this up, I would be right there with you.
Well, come
this on. Is the proper, probably, result.
Right.
Given his indirect involvement.
Yes.
But when I keep hearing the NBA celebrated as the greatest thing on earth in comparison to the NFL, it just drives me crazy, because I know that's bogus and BS.
Well, none of them perfect. We get it.
Not just none of them perfect. I just know men, mm-hmm. and I know locker rooms, and I know what men do around sports.
This wasn't even in a locker room. No.
But I get it. I'm just saying.
This is the cubicle.
It's all a locker room. You get more than two or three men together, the IQ just goes in the toilet. That's just a fact. And so I don't care what
Whitlock.
Sport. I don't care what sport it is or whatever. And so I just hate this little pedestal that somehow the NBA is better and has more integrity and they're more progressive. It's all garbage. The NBA is no different than the NFL. Mark Cuban just cut a check to get out from underneath his problem. I don't have a real problem with it. But it is what it is. Let's don't dress it up as like, oh, but now he's a hero. All right, welcome back to the show. We're joined now by a couple of former Pro Bowlers, Greg Jennings and D'Angelo Hall, a DB and a wide receiver. Played nice, guys. All right, let's move to Greg's old team, the Packers, who had a win turned into a tie after a questionable roughing the passer call against Clay Matthews on Sunday. And while the league doubled down on the call, saying it was so good they use it as a teaching tool, our own rules expert Mike Pereira says the NFL is setting a dangerous precedent by turning routine tackles on the quarterback into penalties. I completely agree. I think they're sitting around in the league office. How can we make this a football where, you know, it's all about the offensive players and no one cares about the defensive players?
I completely disagree. People always resist change. Every rule change that occurs, especially on the defensive side, we understand what they're trying to do. But still, as a defender, you can learn and teach yourself new habits just like you taught yourself old habits. No one walked in day one, know how to make a form tackle. Someone taught you. Now you can do the same thing with this situation. I disagree.
Really?
Yeah, let's
really?
Talk. Let's talk. Let's go.
I agree. I think that the league is, number one, trying to defend themselves. I have no problem with them throwing the flag on Clay Matthews, but to try to make this and use this as the example of what not to do, I see too much of what was done right in this tackle versus what was done wrong. If you can show me that they make this call every single Sunday on every single player that does this,
that shouldn't be the standard, because they don't do that for every single call. Holding is not the same per game, per around the league. So, D'Angelo, you're looking at me like you disagree with me as well.
I want to jump in this so bad.
Come on.
I mean, that's not a penalty.
That is a penalty. Stop.
That is totally not a penalty.
That's a penalty.
That's a penalty. That
you've hit dudes before.
Yes.
You've sat quarterbacks.
To the point, that's why I know it's a penalty.
And that's totally a difference what Clay's doing, landing on him, versus when a guy really lifts him up and throws
Oh, you threw really in there. Did he lift him up? Yes or no?
Throws that D'Angelo, body weight on him.
D'Angelo, can I talk real quick? Because now we're going to go at it because you challenged me. You know why that's a penalty? I give you this example. Look at his left leg if you want to see it with your eyes. But mentally, think about this. If Clay Matthews had to bring that guy down and the Kirk Cousins in the simplest way possible, imagine Kirk Cousins is not Kirk Cousins. It's his son. It's your son. It's my son. Now make that same tackle sack.
He's not supposed to put him down the gentlest way possible.
Oh, okay. Now we're getting
to our football, right?
I'm setting your traps. So now you can send the message within the confines of the rules. The rules are you cannot lift the guy, and if you watch his leg extend and his body go up, why would your body go up to go down for a tackle?
He didn't lift him. He didn't lift him.
Greg, why would your body go up to go down to the ground for a tackle?
So that his shoulder could angle him into the ground. He wanted to punish him a little bit.
I'm not at all trying to defend whether or not they should throw this as a penalty. I don't mind them throwing it but to use it as the example of what not to do, this wasn't that bad of a hit. Okay, you can throw the flag. You can penalize Clay Matthews 6 out of 10 times.
You can ruin the game.
But, you know, that's the problem I have. At the end of the day, you throw a flag that's questionable that you heard two former head of officiating crew say, that's not a flag. Two of them.
But you got to
Okay, but hold on.
Yeah, it's different.
Right? That's how they saw it. That's how this guy sees it. My problem is the NFL, they never can admit when they're wrong. And that's what fans and that's what people have a problem with. If they said, you know what, we were wrong.
Right.
That wasn't a flag. And it was questionable. It was that head referee's job to say, well, make a judgment call. He felt like it was. It was. We tend to want to let those kind of hits go. Now, this one we missed in the New England-Jacksonville game. Mm-hmm. Now, he really put his body weight and came down on Tom Brady. That they should have threw.
But D'Angelo, it's not newsworthy.
If the NFL does that, though.
They do it all the time. It's just not newsworthy. We always see them saying, you know what, we missed that call. They give you the last 2 minutes in terms of description.
But that ain't what they're saying here.
On this one, because they are right in this one. And let me tell you, you guys are sounding like the guy who got pulled over. And he's like, sir, you were speeding. Well, I wasn't going that fast over the limit.
No, and he's like, you sound like the guy who never played the game before.
No, I played.
Who never sacked the quarterback. That's who you look like right now.
I understand. Look, in my day, we could go head to head.
Exactly.
And then I know that they changed the rules, and I have to abide by those rules instead of sitting up there saying you're still in my game to have some fake toughness at the podium.
It's not fake toughness, though. That's what I tune in for. I want some physical play. I don't want to see people get hurt, but I want them close.
So when the shoulder gets separated, when the shoulder gets separated from getting piledrived, then you're like, oh, too far. So, that's what you're waiting for.
So if you were the tackler and you hit that quarterback, you don't think you would have grounds to say, guys, I really didn't do what you're saying I did.
You look
at that and say, I really tried to power drive that guy. Is that what you see?
Yeah, that one was done with minimum intent, but he did cross the line in the threshold. He could have tackled him in a simpler, softer way.
All right, welcome back. Greg Jennings is back with us.
He don't look soft. Dude didn't look soft.
We had to send D'Angelo Hall. We sent D'Angelo Hall offset because I think he was going to take a swing on you.
Yeah, for real.
Take your lunch money from you. All right, we'll get into some comments from another Packers legend in a minute. But first, you all know Marcellus is that dude. Now it's going to show us the best plays from big guys around football. It's time for that dude's dudes. Marcellus, what you got?
Oh, you know we got love for the big dogs in the trenches. It's time to give the unheralded their proper due, their love. Let's start with number three, and let's go to the collegiate level. Syracuse D lineman Kendall Coleman with the rope-a-dope. Now, watch my man Kendall Coleman, how he sets this up to get the sack. Kendall Coleman first, going down the middle of the offensive tackle. Never a good thing. The offensive tackle said, what's he up to? Why is his feet together? I got them ropes on the feet. When your feet together, they about to spread, trust me. And he spread them to dip that shoulder. And we call that dead shoulder. All of a sudden, now, offensive lineman, your hands are in the ropes. You don't have power. You can't push. You have no leverage when your hands are together, and you just got caught, and that was our third that dude's dude.
I like the rope-a-dope.
A little hezzy vibe.
Yeah. Number two, let's go to a big name, but not enough love, in Philadelphia, Fletcher Cox. Look at this, Fletch Armstrong out there, and hit him with the fat boy Slimmy. Oh, yeah, show him where we can move. Now, watch this setup. Whenever you see someone step hard one way, trust, they're going to go the other way. And does he go the other way with the big right arm? So not only did he set him up left, but he's going to club him to the right. And then get skinny in that hole, baby. Get little, get small, get skinny. Coaches always say, hey, the gap is not as big as you think you are. Fletcher Cox, you're number two for getting skinny.
Like that one.
And now, our dat dudes do number one of the week. My man, David Perry of the Vikings, defensive tackle. Shout out to Greg Jennings. He used to put some work in out there. And this is Lambeau 9-1-1. Beautiful setup right here. He got his hands on him, chest getting punched, defibrillator. Uh-oh, Rampart. But you know what David Perry does? He grabs that wrist. Coach always says, you can control a man if you can control his wrist. He has the wrist, and now he gets kind of skinny. But the point of it is, look at offensive lineman now. Look into the sideline. Coach says, stay square. Don't look at the sidelines. When you look into the sidelines, you're out of position. Oh, yeah. David Perry now in position to bring down Aaron Rodgers and get the sack. So he is our number one dat dude of the week.
Can I ask a question? When are some offensive linemen going to be highlighted for their good plays? Could we get a little mixture?
Yeah, we're going to get there. Okay, we're going to get there.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
Didn't that last that dude get cut?
Yeah. Hey, people out there, the streets are watching right now. He is on the streets right now. He just got released today. David Perry, not known as a sack artist, but our dat dude's dude of the week. So somebody employ him. Get the man
that
a job.
That dude is on the streets. He's unemployed. That's not a good sign. All right, Marcellus, that was awesome. Let's move to one of my favorite dudes from week two. Patrick Mahomes,
yes,
who dropped 6 touchdown passes against the Steelers Sunday and now has an NFL record 10 touchdowns through the first 2 games. Now one of the NFL's most legendary gunslingers, Brett Favre, is offering even more praise for the young quarterback.
Coordinators, when they go in and they play Kansas City, you know, they're not just stopping Mahomes. There's an entire cast. That's pretty doggone good. And I think Mahomes' talent is as good as anybody in the league now and has ever played the game.
That is a powerful statement, and it backs up my high praise for him. I don't think it's a ridiculous statement. That doesn't mean he's going to be the greatest player ever, but in terms of tools and what you want to see from a quarterback in terms of arm and the way he's thinking the game, I get what Brett Favre is saying.
Yeah, and also the weapons he has around him and the mastermind he has and his head coach and Andy Reid. I agree with Brett Favre. I said it after week one, and I know it sounded crazy after week one, and I still hear Tony Gonzalez ringing in my ear, pump the brakes. And I was like, I'm talking talent, which is just your abilities to do it. And we all know that the best players are not always the most talented, so don't confuse the two. I agree with Brett.
I agree with Brett, but I'm like, at some point, we have to look at history. We had Deshaun Watson last year, came out the gate strong. Obviously, he's struggling a little bit this year. But we were high on Deshaun Watson, still high on Deshaun Watson. 2 years ago, Dak Prescott. Oh, my gosh, Dak Prescott is the new coming of Russell Wilson. Not happening right now.
Hold on. See him on the same level. Go ahead.
RG3.
No.
When he came out, he was lighting it up his rookie year. The difference between those three guys, if you give me a minute,
I'm listening.
And Pat Mahomes, he's able to sustain his success because he's a pocket passer that is relying on not only his arm, but you said it and Brett Favre said it. The guys around him are going to make it a lot easier for him to have this amount of success throughout the course of the year.
Greg, you made it a production conversation when you gave us those names. And, yeah, Deshaun, Dak, RG3, production. We were like, whoa, amazing. But we're talking what Brett said, arm talent, abilities, talent for the position. There's no way that anyone saw RG3 as having the same arm talent as Patrick Mahomes. Deshaun, no. And real, never Dak. So I'm not clowning their performances.
But their talent to be dual threats with the arm and their legs.
Ability to be a dual threat. But this guy's higher because he is a surgeon in the pocket.
Absolutely.
And he's thinking through it.
But I'm surprised. And it's not that you're downing the guy. But what I'm surprised by is you played with Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers, two guys that you could argue the most talented guys. Mm-hmm. You could put them in that argument. And when you see Pat Mahomes, you don't see the same thing?
I do. I'm just not as excited to just jump on board right now because it's week two. And again, he has an advantage of, like most guys don't have in this league coming in. He sat all of last year.
Right. Like which, Aaron Rodgers
like,
got to sit.
Like Aaron Rodgers sat for 3 years. Yeah. And so when you look at that, his progression mentally, he's able to be a lot quicker out of the blocks because of that. A lot of people won't look at that because he's not coming out as a rookie. We see him as a rookie because this is his first year playing, yeah. But he's not a rookie.
Yeah, you sound like most evaluators, which makes it so difficult to really evaluate a prospect because it's like, what do you weigh in? And even when you come up with that answer, that formula, then you're still like, but what about history and a lot of rookies?
Trying to hedge his bet.
Yeah, exactly. So let me take you to the purest sport there is, the first sport there is, track and field. You know why I love track and field? Because it gets all of the other elements out the way and you just say, who's the fastest? Are you better than me or are you faster than me? Simple, nothing else. I don't want to hear anything else. In track and field, I say we because I won a national championship at 12, you know what I'm saying? We look at a age group runner, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, and there are people who are faster than Usain Bolt walking this planet right now. Noah Lyles, at the age of 20, has run faster than Usain Bolt. So we make the assessment that he's more talented than Usain Bolt. Will he ever beat his records and become the fastest? Different conversation. But does he have more talent? Yeah, because right now he's doing things that even Usain Bolt didn't do at the same time.
Agreed.
All right, welcome back. Marcellus and I are joined now by Fox College football analyst Joel Klatt. We've got a new segment for you right now with our resident Ivy Leaguer, Marcellus, here.
Yes.
We're going to put on our thinking caps.
I love it.
And take a deeper look at some of the big issues in sports. We've got a special cap for our Columbia grad, Darnell. Bring out the motorboard.
What is this?
Oh, huh?
Ivy Leaguer.
Oh, nice.
You are confined to the Waldorf Astoria.
The man who thinks he's the smartest man at this table, but he's about to find out that Joel and I are both smarter than him.
Uh-oh.
All right, let's move to college football.
Yes, I like it.
Let's move to college football, where Nick Saban and number one Alabama are off to another hot start, setting an SEC record by scoring 50-plus points in each game to start the year. We've come to expect nothing less from Alabama's dominance on the field, just as much as we expect Saban's bullying ways off the field, which we saw with ESPN's Maria Taylor after week one.
All right, Coach, everyone had questions about who was going to start at quarterback when this game started. What answers did you have about your quarterbacks after watching both of them play tonight?
Well, I still like both guys. I think both guys are good players. I think both guys can help our team. All right, so why do you continually try to get me to say something that doesn't respect one of them? I'm not going to, so quit asking.
All right, that's the perfect setup. I want to discuss bully coaches. Nick Saban is a bully. He's stubborn and gruff and old school, trying to run the bully coach out of sports. But I look at Saban, Bill Belichick, Greg Popovich, and the modern coaches who can produce consistent dominance, and they can all be described as bullies. Is being a bully the best way to be a great coach?
No. For every bully coach out there, I give you a nice coach. I give you Pete Carroll. I give you a Steve Kerr. I give you a Bill Walsh of the past. I give you a Phil Jackson, who was so anti-bully that he let the players fight with each other and wouldn't even get in the middle of it. So the most successful coaches, I think it's a mixed bag in terms of what type of personality and attributes that they possess.
Joel, before you push back here, I disagree. Okay. Phil Jackson had Michael Jordan, Scottie Pippen. He had the greatest player in all the world. Steve Kerr has got a cheat code and has all the most talented players in the NBA.
I need that cheat code.
Yeah, I'm talking about the guys that produce consistent greatness. What Saban's doing is so incredible. What Urban Meyer, everywhere he shows up, and I think most people would consider
and
him a bully.
Who's the thorn in their side? Dabo Sweeney, who is just a sweetie pie out there. So, I mean, consistently, you can go on one side.
It is. And college football, I think, is a really interesting place to study this because I feel like the coach has more influence maybe in college athletics than they do in professional athletics, in particular when you're talking about the NBA, when it's really about one player or two players or three players. So I looked at college coaches. That's just where my mind went. And I think I'm kind of with Marcellus here, but I will push back on this. I don't think it's about style. I think it's about philosophy. I've seen tyrants be successful, but I've seen the player-friendly coach be successful. I think it has everything to do. Well, John Wooden, I think, was somewhat player-friendly.
He had a cheat code, Sam Gilbert.
I think Mike Krzyzewski is somewhat player-friendly. But here's the commonality.
Grew up under Bobby Knight.
Where is the commonality, and which is why he wasn't like Bobby Knight? The commonality is in how they communicate to their players. You see, players are not necessarily motivated by results. They're motivated by purpose, and they don't even know it. It's biology, right? Our brain is basically locked into three different zones. And our outer neocortex, that's what we have thought and reason and facts and everything like that, right? So I can tell you everything I want you to know, but that doesn't make you trust me. None of you. You can't trust me if I just give you a bunch of facts. Right. Now, the limbic brain, that's where all your feelings and emotions and trust and loyalty, that's where that sits. And I think it has to do with coaches that understand how to speak to that part of the brain rather than the neocortex part of the brain and get players to believe in the purpose of their organization. Let me give you a quick example. Most coaches in college will say, hey, come play for me. We win a lot of games. We got this fancy building. Look at our cool uniforms. I'm not bad myself. I'm pretty swell. Come on, it'll be fun. Great coaches speak like Nick Saban coaches. The process. He says, everything we do, we believe in 100% control over the factors that we have control over in order to be the best possible version of ourselves. We do that by giving everything we have on every play, regardless of the score or situation. By the way, we win a lot of football games. Do you want to join us?
Okay, Joel, I can't dispute the things you're saying. I believe, though, Joel, they're built on a foundation. The things you're talking about, the way they communicate, is built on a foundation of stubbornness and resoluteness and a bit, some people would describe it as bullying, like they're immovable objects. I don't care what the rest of the world thinks. We're doing it the Nick Saban way. We're doing it Urban Meyer's way. We're doing it Bobby Knight's way. And this coach that everybody, I'm telling you, people can't wait for Nick Saban to fail because they think he's too rough, he's too gruff. And all these coaches, from Bobby Knight, and I grew up in Indiana, I got mixed feelings about Bobby Knight. The results that he produced are incredible. And I think because kids, young people, are attracted to leadership that is immovable, well, stubborn.
Couldn't you argue that the purpose is immovable? The cause is immovable. All of us want to be a part of something bigger than ourselves. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah. I mean, look, the purpose becomes the story. And through that story, the players become the actors and the participants. And like you said, sometimes without even full knowledge that you are actually playing a part in this role, in this story. But for me, I've seen that every single team sport, whether it's a small team sport, like in track and field, you're running on a relay, it's only four of you. Or it could be a basketball, five or 13 guys on roster, football, 53, hundreds in high school and college. We need some gravity. We need something that brings it all together. That traditionally comes in a stubborn leader that traditionally says, you want to go here, you only want to do five push-ups, you only want to do two wind sprints. I need to be the stubborn one who forces you against your will, because every sport I've ever participated in is a great game of skill, but a greater game of will. That's why the little guy can win. That's why the big guy can still suffer. It's the will, and they're trying through bullying to get the most out of your will.
Yeah, and I would also point to, there is a spot for tough love. I would argue that parents that don't discipline their kids don't love their kids as much as parents that do discipline their kids. Because the discipline is necessary for the full potential of that child.
Yeah.
Right? And you can argue that the same can be said for a coach and his players. That a coach is not fully invested in every individual on his team unless he is requiring each individual to give the most of himself or herself in a team sport environment.
I believe there are two really super successful ways to lead. And therefore, I'm saying, and to coach. There's the bullying, and we put a negative connotation on that, but there's a stubbornness. Like, the military believes in that. The Marines believe in that. And so if it wasn't an effective leadership style, I don't think we would see it in the military. And then I think there's, and you brought up Dabo Swinney, and I'm glad you did, I believe spirituality and an appeal to a higher power and cause and wrapping your purpose in those, I'm going to say it, I don't even know why it's controversial, but it is now, in those Christian values, I think works well in sports. And so, but I think they're almost from the same cloth. And a lot of the stubborn guys, from Vince Lombardi to all these guys that again, one of the greatest coaches of all time, they were deeply religious as well. I think they work in conjunction. A guy like Dabo Swinney leans more into his religion. Nick Saban, and I don't know what his religion is, but he leans more into just being resolute, stubborn, and a bully. And I think it works. Now, can it go too far? No question. But does it just consistently, when it's allowed to take root, produce incredible results? I think so.
Yeah, I mean, it usually breaks down to two factions. It's the player-friendly coach.
Yeah.
And it's the tough coach, tough-minded coach, whatever you want to say. And I played in both camps. I played for Bill Parcells. We know where he is. And I played for Marv Levy, and he's on the complete opposite end. But neither coach coached from the extremes. Parcells still had his tender moments. He still had his moments where he would engage you like a player-friendly coach. And Marv Levy and a player-friendly coach will sometimes get the strap. Like, he would come out and come after you. So I don't think in totality, even though I agree with you, let's not mischaracterize anybody that's saying that they work in an absolute state.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to put it. Because, again, I think I don't want to just focus on style, right? Because I think that philosophy has a lot to do with it. Yeah, there's some substance to it. Yeah. Two things that I want to end with, and that is Simon Sinek wrote a great book, and it's really a business book, but I think it's a great leadership book, and it's called Start With Why, and it's talking about business leader, and this Start With Why basically means that every company or player in this sense, so every player knows what they play. We play football, defensive line, quarterback, whatever it is, offensive line. Some players know how they play or how they're successful. I do it in this style. Very few players know why they play. What is the purpose behind with which they play and they're on this team? I think the most successful coaches tap in and define for the players the why. And when they get that buy-in, then all of a sudden it compounds exponentially into that team atmosphere. And then the last thing I would say is the old quote that is above a lot of coaches' doors. Nobody cares how much you know until they know how much you care. And if you start from that point, you can be hard, you can be gruff, you can be player friendly. People are generally going to love you as long as you define their purpose for them.
That is amazing, because my book comes out October 23rd. Great plug. Never Shut Up. Thank you. But there's a story I tell about Bill Parcells, and it was prophetic. It was well before I could even internalize it. And in short, it went like this. He helped me find out my why. I never knew until Bill Parcells pulled me into his room. He's standing at the whiteboard, a little dismissive. I'm the new free agent in town. He tells me to sit down. He writes a word on the board, and he says, that word is drugs. And I'm thinking, I'm a little taken aback. I look at that word and say, why are you asking me that? And he says, in simple, that word stopped short the greatest player I ever coached, who I could have made an even greater person, and I failed him. Marcellus? What's your word? What is stopping you short? Why are you now in my office as a free agent versus still killing it with the San Diego Chargers? And once you find out that why, it's amazing how much it makes you check your gauges to make sure you're still invested in it the same. So that same example I had to live through, and it's amazing.
So the ultimate hardcore football coach, it was the tender moment.
Yes.
Defining for you your purpose of being a player.
All right, welcome back. All right, Marcellus. You know, I can't stand what's happening out there in social media land. So we got our social media manager, Darnell Smith, representing Warren Central, the greatest high school in the history of high school.
I thought Lawrence North was the best high school in Indiana.
Oh, man, stop it.
What? What?
You know the kind of clown suit we put on Lawrence North every week?
That's not what my people say. Okay.
All right. Lying to you.
Darnell's here to convince me social media is not so bad. What you got, Darnell?
Yes, sir. Let's start with King James, whose 11-year-old son, Bryce Maximus, was featured in his highlight video tweeted out by Slam Online, which led his dad to go full LeVar Ball in hyping up his son, replying, "The best shooter in this household for sure. Hashtag flamethrower." Does LeBron need to pump the brakes?
I don't like, particularly in something this positive, I could see myself doing this as a dad, getting all excited. I couldn't imagine having a kid that talented. I don't like second guessing dads. This isn't in the LeVar Ball lane to me.
No.
This is fun, but he is maybe putting a little pressure on his son and making him a bit more of a celebrity.
I'm not going to make this anything more than what it was. A tongue-in-cheek comment saying, "Hey, man, let me even poke fun at myself. My boy can shoot better than me, and you guys know I'm a good shooter, if not becoming a great shooter." But, yeah, this is all positive. This is just a father saying, "I'm going to let you know our tender moments in our home, but the whole world gets to see it, but don't mischaracterize it."
And that is one of the things I love about LeBron. It's one of the things I love about your Twitter feed, the celebration of your family.
Yeah.
And when LeBron celebrates his family, I think it's an important message for everybody.
Yep.
What's next, Darnell?
Yeah, let's stick with LeBron, who's apparently ready for his close-up with the production company tweeting about LeBron's long-rumored sequel to Space Jam. The tweet shows a locker room listing LeBron starring alongside Bugs Bunny with Black Panther's Ryan Coogler signed on to produce.
Mm.
Are you guys excited about this?
I didn't see Space Jam 1.
Me either. What? Me either.
Yeah,
I've never seen it. And no interest to see it.
Yeah, I'm not
oh, my God.
I don't do the whole science fiction cartoon.
Yeah, me either.
I'm not even into Star Wars.
No, I
hate science fiction. Space Jam?
Yeah. I'm with you.
Are they playing basketball in space? Yeah, what's it about?
Baby
all
boomers.
Sci-fis miss me with sci-fis. Like, keep it documentary or nonfiction. Keep it 100. Enough good stories that are real. Then you got to go make up something. I'm supposed to follow you. I don't watch
what
Lord
is
of
good
the
about
Ring.
Space Jam.
Space Jam is an all-time legendary movie. I'm mad that LeBron's even doing the sequel. You need to just leave it alone.
You just jealous because Kobe ain't get a part.
Yeah.
It should be Kobe. That's another story.
All right, what's next, Darnell?
Staying in the NBA for a quick second, where CJ McCollum is staying active online this offseason. He beefed with Kevin Durant on and off his podcast earlier this summer, and now he's tweeting about an NBA memo celebrating the league's charity and activism, saying, "Best league in the world. What great leadership looks like." Is McCollum throwing shade at the NFL here?
Yeah, let me get my Twitter off here. Yeah, he's throwing shade. And he's doing. What, did they not unlock my Twitter off? Yeah,
maybe you shouldn't
got a
use
new
it.
Bottle.
Maybe you shouldn't use it.
Yeah, let me get this out.
Get
CJ McCollum and all the NBA is so great. It's so much better than the NFL. Stop it! Stop it! The NFL makes $15 billion. You're just jealous.
Yeah. Well, okay. Let me defend him because I'm with you, but I'm a little on the fence for this reason. If in a race in terms of what he's saying, activism, and he's talking about trying to go out there and help the brand, NBA is far behind the NFL, but closing the gap steadily.
And $15 billion compared to $5 billion.
And what in the terms, in the metrics he's using, which is not just financial.
Optics.
Yeah.
PR.
Respect for that. And look. If
fake stuff.
If you and I race, it's not about am I fast, am I just better than you? And look, he's saying in this scope, NBA racing the NFL in terms of activism, et cetera.
Oh, you know what it's called?
What?
Moving the goalposts.
Well, yeah,
he's moved the goalposts.
Yeah,
okay, y'all's ratings are 10 times better than ours.
Right.
Y'all make far more money, generate far more money than us. You're the most pervasive, powerful thing in the history of pop culture.
Reach.
Number one show on 5 different television networks.
Every
but
time.
You know what? We play the PR, social media, social justice game better than you. Great. Have a cookie.
You done had one.
Several. I done had a dozen. Darnell, what's next?
Yes, let's talk about Marcellus's favorite band, Maroon 5.
What?
Who will reportedly perform the halftime show at Super Bowl 53 in Atlanta this February. This raised a lot of eyebrows online as people thought a local Atlanta hip-hop artist would get the opportunity. The Ringer's Shea Serrano tweeting, "Having the Super Bowl in Atlanta and getting Maroon 5 to perform
It's like going to Papa Doe and asking the waiter to bring you some Long John Silvers. Y'all been to NFL should have gone?
Yeah, right.
What's wrong with that?
I done had a McDonald's and a Burger King before. Like, I'm going to do my own taste test.
Listen, this is why I got a new can of Twitter off.
Whoa, this is Twitter off?
Oh, my God.
Why? Give it to me.
Sell it.
Come on.
Sell it.
Come on.
The fans in the stadium and the majority of people watching the game on TV.
I get that.
They don't want to hear hip-hop, man.
Oh, no. Look, in a vacuum, you're absolutely correct. But let's look at it in totality. Since Janet Jackson and Justin Timberlake, he got his redemption, she didn't. And the culture, the genres, all of a sudden, it's just not, it's skewing farther away from, like, the most popular music form on this planet, which is hip-hop. It's crazy. Hip-hop is dominating the charts, dominating YouTube views, sales, and still can't get the NFL.
I listen to hip-hop in my headphones because it's porn, and I don't want everybody knowing I'm listening to porn.
Yeah.
That's what hip-hop is.
But they got clean versions. There's no clean version of porn.
Come on now.
I hope you ain't watching the clean
versions of hip-hop, they still dirty as hell.
I get it.
And so, look, I listen to it with my headphones on. You don't do it in front of 80,000 people and 100 million people watching on television. It's too pornographic. It's too vile. They played themselves by going this pornographic route, and you can't get that mainstream love.
Well, we'll be at the hors d'oeuvres table because they ain't going to have my attention that much.
Sneak one more in.
I'm going to get that heat.
Finally, let's move to Ryan Fitzpatrick, whose swaggy tracksuit and even swaggier play has people calling him Fitzmagic. But maybe not for long. Dolphins rookie Minka Fitzpatrick, who apparently has been going by Fitzmagic since high school, filed a trademark on the nickname, and his mother defended him on Twitter saying, "Nobody said one word about somebody else's name, nor did it when it filed. So stop the nonsense." So guys, million-dollar question. Who's more Fitzmagical, Ryan or Minka?
I'm going to go a different route.
Yeah.
If my name was Minka, I would go with the nickname Fitzmagic too. So I don't blame him for taking the name Fitzmagic on, and he's had it longer than Ryan Fitzpatrick, so everybody quit whining.
Yeah, your mama gonna defend you now. She the one named you Minka. You're like, mama, you better clean this up.
Is Minka on Morning Joe? Is there a Minka on Morning Joe?
Yeah, right. I will say this. Paging Shaquille O'Neal and Dwight Howard. Are we still fighting over nicknames? Like, didn't we learn from their beef and the fact that, oh, I'm Superman. No, I'm Superman. Like, man, I'm Fitzmagic. Stop it. Neither one of you guys could claim
that. Dude, what? Do you know my nickname?
Grimace?
Big Sexy.
You ain't know. Big I knew sexy. You were going to go there.
Big Mouth, and Sexy call you that. Opinion.
You ain't no
Big Mouth Sexy Opinion. They've been calling me that since
when?
Nottingham Village days in the early, late 70s.
That was somebody next to you. You kept turning around.
All right, today we're talking about one of our regulars, Eric Dickerson, who will be here on Friday.
Oh, yeah.
Eric's been taking some knocks this week over his threatened boycott of the Hall of Fame and demands that the NFL pony up health and salary benefits for Hall of Famers. I don't love the approach, but I don't think Dickerson's demands are totally out of bounds. I only dropped Eric 2 points in my overall rating at a 79. I have him, his job performance right now, he's an advisor for the Rams, he's a broadcaster here on television. I got him at a 17. Mm-hmm. 23 all-time greatness, slightly below Jim Brown and a few others. Characters where he drops. Authenticity, I keep him the same at 23. Eric's about as real as it gets. But character, Eric's a little greedy. I've told that to him to his face. He's greedy. This is a bit of a greedy move. I drop him 2 points from an 81 to a 79.
Interesting. So he's not a GOAT.
He is a GOAT. 23, he's a GOAT.
79 is not technically a GOAT.
No, he's not a GOAT.
Yeah, and he
same score as you, though.
Exactly, and that's my problem, because I'm like, he is a GOAT, but let me talk about why he was demerited. You look at all-time greatness. Stop playing. 25. Who's better?
Whoa. Who's better?
Who's better?
Jim Brown?
I said who's better, not different. Who's better?
Jim Brown is just different.
Jim Brown played NFL like 4 years, like he was in college or something.
Barry Sanders.
Where's his 2,000 yards?
Barry Sanders.
Barry got his 2,000 negative plays. He ran backwards more than he ran forward. Go.
Sweetness.
Oh, rest in peace. Respect. Dickerson did more breakaway, like big plays, not just the tough plays, not just 12 guys hanging on me, including the coach. Like, just.
You're so young.
18. I'm so young. 18. My favorite players are John Elway and you. Now you messed up. First year, 1,800. Second year player, 2,100.
Come on, sweetness, man.
We're talking about 2,100 yards and you only the second year.
I love Eric Dickerson. What? Anyway, go, keep going.
All right.
I can't believe
it. And then we got character went down, like you said. This move looks a little opportunistic. It just looks like, hey, T.O., oh, you don't want to go to Hall of Fame? Hey, Kaepernick, you get $100 million out the NFL just by taking a knee? Well, then you know what? I am a little more beat up than I was before. So
I like your point about T.O. Getting credit for sparking this.
Somebody in that Hall of Fame room said, wait a minute, we don't have to show up? You mean we could actually use this to our cause to affect what we want change? T.O. needs props for this. That said,
I don't know if he needs props.
No, he gets props. He was courageous. That's what you give a pioneer to something that now sparks a change. That's called props.
Yep. All right, go ahead.
Give us a prop. And authenticity, the timing's off, I just think, right now.
How can you be more authentic than Eric Dickerson?
Because he didn't think about all the players. And even the players he said he thought of, they said, no, you didn't.
That ain't never been Eric Dickerson. I love Eric.
I love this dog.
I was in Indianapolis when he was on the Colts, and I always said, the dude would hold out in a minute. He always thinks about his money. This is right on brand.
Hey, he's going to be here Friday. We're going to put him to the fire and see how he holds up, because we know he's going to bring it down.
Let me tell you something. Eric Dickerson been with DJ Quick longer than you and I all together. If it don't make dollars, it don't make sense.
It don't make sense.